Welcome into the Draft Good Players podcast, Chris Schubert and Jamie Eisner. Yes, we are back together. The gang is back together on a Sunday night.
They missed us. They missed our Sunday night little rendezvous.
Football recap show. We have missed doing this. So Jamie and I, he messaged me earlier in the week. He said, hey, dude, why don't you come back? Why don't you do this with me? And so that's what we're going to do. We're going to do these week recaps when everything is all said and done. Now, spoiler alert, we are recording this in the middle of Sunday Night Football, but we feel extremely confident in the way Sunday Night Football is trending.
Middle three quarters of the way through.
I feel comfortable. I feel comfortable in the way that this game is going to end up, unless some weird stuff happens, and some weird stuff certainly could happen in week one of the National Football League. And hopefully you are on the right side of that week one action. And if you were doing so with our friends over at BetOnline, good on you. If you weren't, head on over to BetOnline, the fastest and easiest way to wager on all your favorite sports, contests, events, first-to-market odds and lines, reviews, news for all of the leagues, Major League Baseball. We got a playoff push going on right now, NFL, NBA, NHL, combat sports, esports, and even golf. They are the top online resource for all of your sports information from live in-game betting, props, and futures. Head on over to BetOnline today or use your mobile device. Make your first sports bet. Use our promo code BLEAV50, that's BLEAV50, to receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. Bet online, where the game starts. And Jamie, since we're back together again, I will ask you the same segue question I asked you when we were doing the show in the past. Where would you like to start? What game would you like to start with?
Well, let's just start from the top. And when I say the top, I mean the top of the app that I use to view scores. Okay. And that game, Chris, is Eagles-Lions.
This was a game.
73 points in that game?
This was a game that when the Lions first came out and I saw what the total was, I said, I would like the total in this football game. I would like the over. I had never been more confident in an over in my life. And this game delivered on all fronts in that regard. You had defensive touchdowns. You had two offenses. They were able to find their footing in this football game. And I guess, Jamie, there are two sides to this coin, right? There are two angles that we can take from this football game. The Eagle side of things, I think they probably look at this as they escaped with a victory. They look at this as maybe not their best performance on offense. And if you're a Lions fan, or if you're somebody that's been talking about the Lions that we have, this is kind of what you expect the Lions to do every week. They're going to compete. They're going to be coached well. They're going to be able to stay in football games. They're going to win some of them. They're going to lose some of them. But this is a football team that's probably in year two, maybe year three of a rebuild. And this is what you expect from this team on a weekly basis. So from Detroit, I know it's a loss. You probably don't like the way the season started, but you got to be happy with the way you competed, because I expect that on a week-to-week basis.
Yeah, I think if there was a theme for week one, for the most part, it was this is where hype meets reality. And there was a nice reality check for a lot of teams and a lot of players that had a lot of hype coming into this year. But I want to focus really on three different players in this game for me. So if you look at the Philadelphia side, A.J. Brown was absolutely phenomenal in this matchup. Like, I mean, you look at what he was able to do and assimilate into that offense as quickly as he did. He had a 41% target share in his first game. And for me, my big concern coming into the year was, okay, he's going to go to an offense that, you know, look, they're going to throw the ball about the same rate that Tennessee did. So it's not like he was leaving, an offense throwing the ball 45 times a game. But where would he fit in the pecking order? How often would Jalen Hurts look his way? How effective would Jalen Hurts be when he did look his way? And look, Brown was open a lot. He got the ball a lot. Got targeted a lot. And I think you have to be really, really excited if you're an A.J. Brown fantasy manager right now that he looks like he's hitting the ground running and, quite frankly, might be at the expense of Devonta Smith, who only got like three or four targets. There's still some debate on the official number in this game. No catches, put a big nothing burger up for those of you that played him in a flex spot. But A.J. Brown was really, really dynamic in this game and really exciting. And it looks like he's going to again, it's 1 week. Got to be careful not to overreact too much. But looks like he's going to pick up to be the player we thought he was going to be this time last year when we were projecting forward.
Yeah, I'll say this, Jimmy. You look at the box score, and I'm not going to go total box score scouting here because I did watch some of these games. But you look up and down the box score, and this is kind of what you expect the Eagles to do on a regular basis. Jalen Hurts with 90 yards on the ground. Miles Sanders had 96 yards on the ground. They're not going to be overly dynamic throwing the football, right? Jalen Hurts was only 18 of 32 for 243 yards, didn't throw for a touchdown. But A.J. Brown's going to be successful. Dallas Goedert's going to factor into this. So this, when you look at the box score, is probably the way the Eagles feel like offensively they're going to have to work on a week-to-week basis. Now, defensively, they're going to need to do some things better if they're going to want to win football games and compete. But yeah, I think offensively, this is what you expect the Eagles to look like on a week-to-week basis.
Particularly on their ground game, because like all four of their primary ball carriers, whether it was Jalen Hurts, Sanders, Boston Scott, Kenneth Gainwell, they all got in the end zone in this game. And, you know, that's where I'm going to go with my like Miles Sanders takeaway here, because he obviously had a really strong game, and he really only played over just a tick over 50% of the offensive snaps. And you're going to see this three-headed monster plus Jalen Hurts running the ball pretty consistently. So I like him going forward. He's going to continue to split carries. He's obviously has to deal with the long extended injury history that he has gotten of like these small minor injuries. He even had one coming into this season. I still look at him as an RB3 going forward, but you know, next week he plays against the Vikings. Vikings, I know you might look at that game and things went a little bit differently than Green Bay would have hoped, but they actually ran the ball effectively when they gave that opportunity. Aaron Jones and AJ Dillon ran at about 6.3 yards a carry in that game. They just didn't get a lot of opportunities to do it. Minnesota wasn't a particularly strong rush defense last year when it came to facing fantasy running backs. So Miles Sanders might be a guy that I hate to say this, because whenever you start to feel semi-confident about playing Miles Sanders in fantasy, he usually comes back to bite you. But I think he could be a flex caliber play next week.
Jamie, do you know how to good game?
Yeah, Chris, tell me from a year ago, tell me you had a good game. For those of you that
I was not talking about DeAndre Swift, but he deserves some credit for going 15 for 144 and a touchdown.
So who else were you talking about, Chris?
A person that I campaigned for in the second half of last season, every chance I got a chance to talk about him, Amon-Ra St. Brown. 8 catches, 64 yards, and he gets into the end zone. This is what he's going to be. This is what he's going to be on a weekly basis for you.
Even when Jameson Williams comes back?
Okay.
That's my only concern.
Let me see it, right?
That's fair.
I don't know how, coming off of an injury.
I get it.
Right. And so for right now, I think this is a very fair expectation of what Amon-Ra St. Brown is going to be. Because not only did he do it in the second half of last year, but he's come out and he's done the exact same thing in week one. This is the same player that he was at the end of last season. Doesn't feel like the moment's too big. Doesn't feel like there's any year too. Like, he is the same player. He was out there, caught a big touchdown for them. So but yes, DeAndre Swift also deserves some love. He had a very good game on the ground for this Lions team. And again, I said at the top, but like, this is what you expect the Lions to do. Jared Goff's going to make like a mistake and you're going to be upset, but he's going to be able to keep you in the game. You're going to be able to run the ball. You have some weapons on offense it's going to keep you in it. Like, this is what they're going to be on offense.
This felt like a lot like what the Lions did at times last year, if you remember, where they look terrible at times. Usually they get off to a hot start, then look terrible at times.
And then they just like,
and then Jared Goff has this like furious comeback in the fourth quarter where you never really feel like they're going to win the game, but you also aren't quite sure they're going to lose it still either. So it's a weird kind of combination, but there's a lot of fantasy value on that team. Obviously Swift having a lot of success there, Hockenson. DJ Chark looks pretty decent here. If he could stay healthy, he provides that deep threat element to the Lions that they did not have at that point last year. So there's reason for fantasy optimism. There's obviously reason for real life optimism as well for the Lions. They're just not there yet. I mean, we expect the Eagles to be a playoff caliber team. I know there's a lot of hype around the Lions, but I do not expect them to be a playoff caliber team.
That fancy app that you're using there, Jamie, what's the next game that it has on the schedule for you, for us to talk about? Because I could go, but I don't want to go out of order.
You can go whatever order you want, Chris.
Yeah, but you already went out of order, so now it's going to confuse me. So we just need to pick one list and stick with it.
Let's talk about the tie.
Oh, boy. This was interesting.
So let me start with this. Also, I think for those of you that are watching the video, I put my earphones in the wrong ear, which explains why they're so low.
I was just going to say, nine minutes in, you figured this out. Okay.
Yeah. Left versus right is really difficult.
It's tough.
Also, apparently for the Colts to ever, you know, win a game in like week one. I don't know why.
Six or seven straight years that they don't have a victory?
Something like
week
that. I'm getting like them losing week one and Scott Frost losing one score game numbers mixed up in my head, by the way.
Scott Frost can't do that anymore. So at least not at Nebraska.
I think there are two points I want to make for this game.
Okay.
One, Michael Pittman Jr.
Dude.
Real deal. Real deal.
Yeah, this was a star-making performance from him when they needed him to be, right? They were down in this game 20-3 at one point. They had to make a big comeback, and he was a big part of it. So you got to give kudos. The actual statistics, nine catches, 121 yards, a touchdown on 13 targets.
The only
person in double-digit targets on the Colts, and the next highest had six.
Look, there's going to be some long-term questions about the Colts' wide receiver core and secondary options, and maybe some questions about was it reasonable for Chris Ballard to feel comfortable with the wide receiver room going into the year? But what I can tell you is Michael Pittman Jr. is a star.
And he's really good.
I'm glad to see him get, because the only thing you ever worry about, especially early in the season, you're projecting forward and you're projecting talent and you're doing all of this, is that when you change quarterbacks, sometimes that quarterback just favors somebody else or takes some time to get on cue. Not always, but sometimes. It's always what you worry about. And we'll talk about this a little bit later with a guy like Deontay Johnson and Mitch Trubisky. But, you know, when you have guys that you think are going to be stars, the one like question mark is, okay, well, new quarterback coming in. Look great. Instant chemistry with Matt Ryan. Matt Ryan is a quarterback that tends to pepper his wide receiver one with targets over the years. I mean, he has favored his wide receiver one over his wide receiver two by a considerable margin at times in Atlanta. So we shouldn't be shocked by this. He's inching closer and closer to that wide receiver one territory for me. I don't have him quite in that top 12 yet for the rest of the season, but he's inching closer to me. I want to talk about the running back on the other side, though.
Wait.
You have another Colts one?
I do.
Well, Jonathan Taylor's good, too.
No, but I think it's a very important point to note here. I understand why they had to do this. Matt Ryan throwing the ball 50 times is not going to be a recipe for success long term. They cannot do this. He threw the ball 50 times.
Like the Atlanta days.
Right. They could only tie. They have to find better balance. They have to find better success. Now, they ran the ball 31 times with Jonathan Taylor, so it's not like they completely abandoned the running game. But they cannot ask Matt Ryan to throw the ball that many times and expect to win on a weekly basis, because that's not who they are. They are a smash mouth, run the football, Jonathan Taylor, pound the rock, ask Matt Ryan to throw the ball maybe 28 to 35 times a game and get out of Dodge with the victory. Like, that's what they are, and this is not them.
Yeah, and if Frank Reich wants to make good on his preseason promise to not give Jonathan Taylor 8,000 touches, they got to figure that out.
Now, he only touched the ball three times. He only carried the ball three times. Yeah, Matt Ryan had more carries, according to the statute.
And again, I'm not advocating for less Jonathan Taylor touches. I'm just saying this was a weird game, because if you look at the box score for Indianapolis, nothing stands out to you as this is a game that they shouldn't have won. You know, it was just a weird game throughout. And I know they didn't have Shaquille Leonard on defense. I know they didn't have some other pieces, but I don't know. I just can't shake this feeling that this is just the same Colts team we're watching the last couple of years over and over and over again. Can't shake it.
All right. We got to talk about Damian Pierce, because what the heck happened here? What happened?
So this was where we talked about how sometimes the hype train gets derailed. He wasn't playing much at all. He played 20 of Houston's 68 offensive snaps. That was it. He was out on all passing downs. We saw Rex Burkhead a ton. He was a non-factor in the overtime. He barely ever got in there. This is what I feared.
But Jamie, it's not like he didn't impress in preseason. He looked good. He looked like a player that could play. And so you just choose to not play him?
But sometimes this is what happens when you have veterans and rookies and you have old school coaching.
We're going to talk about a team in New York that did this to one of their rookies a little bit later on, because they did a very similar thing.
Although Michael Carter is a lot better at this stage of his career than Rex Burkhead is. But
not the player I'm talking about. Not the position I'm talking about. So we'll get to that later.
Oh, we'll get to that later. That's a tease, is what they call it. But here's the thing. This was the game. If you wanted to make a game script for Damian Pierce to have success for Houston, this was it. Because as gutsy as their performance was today, for the most part, they're still not a good football team. And they're going to be losing a lot of games. And they're going to be behind in a lot of games. And they're going to be in obvious passing situations in a lot of games. There is nothing that came out of today that makes me believe that Damian Pierce is going to get work in those situations. I'm not saying you're dropping him. I'm not saying you're doing that. But he needs to be on your bench next week.
Yeah, no, he was starting for me, and I'm taking him out next week. I can't do it.
And again, I had him as a flex level player this week. I had him as a flex caliber option, and a lot of people played him. And I don't blame you for playing him.
Yeah,
you can't play him right now. He's just not out there.
Brandon Cooks is good.
20 of 68?
Yeah, that's not great.
You're just not going to do much with that.
And no offense to the person that I'm about to slander right here, but it's not like Rex Burkhead is Jonathan Taylor. Rex Burkhead isn't better talent-wise than Damian Pierce, to where he should be monopolizing all of the calories, right? That's not what the situation is.
This split just is... I knew there would be a split. This split shocked me.
Yep.
And it wasn't Smith, like, man, he was playing bad. He didn't have like an early, he didn't have like the Ronald Jones situation where you have like that early fumble in the first quarter and then you bench for,
James Cook.
This was
Cook
the plan.
No, yeah, this is what they wanted to do. Brandon Cooks, doesn't that matter who his quarterback is? Brandon Cooks is good at football.
QB proof. Love Brandon Cooks.
You're not picking him up, but I would just like to talk about OJ Howard for a second.
Yeah, I'm not touching him. He really didn't play that much. He ran six routes.
He had efficiency.
But he had two touchdowns.
Two targets, two catches, two touchdowns.
Can't be more efficient than that.
Efficiency.
Look, that's all you can ask for. And I mean, there's no actionable advice here. It's a good game. The first touchdown was excellent. The first touchdown was the epitome of what people wanted OJ Howard to be, as a guy that can go up the seam in the red zone and out physical somebody for the ball at the goal line and get a touchdown. Like that is the image people have in their mind of OJ Howard and what they want him to be. Maybe he can be in that role. Maybe because he's going to get a lot of work on a bad team and he can kind of grow into that role versus being like, hey, if you're not producing for Tampa or Buffalo, briefly, I mean, he didn't play a regular season game for Buffalo, but you're out of here. We'll see, but I'm not picking him up. I'm not going to spend $1 fab on him right now, but it's a good game. I'm glad you acknowledged him.
I think that's it for this game. I think that's all we have.
Let's move on to
the other tie, the other close tie.
No, not yet. Let's do the Baker Bowl. Let's talk about
that disaster. There's a lot to discuss here. I'll let you go first.
So which side do you want me to discuss? You want me to do Panthers first or do you want me to do Browns?
Let's talk about the Panthers first.
Okay. I want to talk about Christian McCaffrey first.
Please.
There's good news and there's bad news.
The good news is he scored a touchdown.
Good news is he scored a touchdown and he left the game healthy.
Check and check.
Plus. I'm very happy with that. The bad news was Ben McAdoo did not structure that offense around Christian McCaffrey getting a lot of touches. And again, it's 1 week. It's a 1 week sample size. Not freaking out, but it's worth monitoring. They play the Giants in New York next week. Believe it or not, they're actually underdogs to the one and oh. They are 2.5 point underdogs to the 1-0 New York Giants in New York next week.
It's the Ben McAdoo revenge game next week.
I didn't even think about this.
Holy smokes. I can't wait to not watch any of that game.
Robbie Anderson's return to MetLife.
Fantastic. We can't be disrespectful. He was the leading receiver on the Panthers.
No, he was good.
He's
actually pretty good today.
Which is interesting.
He had a huge touchdown play.
Yeah, DJ Moore not leading the team in targets was an upset for me.
DJ Moore should have been targeted more. He was open more than he got it. But like I'm hoping that's a one game thing. We'll see. I still believe in the talent. But my concern is this was only, and I wrote the stat that by the time you hear this, this will be up on thedraftnetwork.com, like a full recap of all the fantasy things you need to know. But this is a fun stat from this article that I wrote because cheap plugs are my favorite thing. This was only the fourth time in his last 23 healthy games that Christian McCaffrey got under 5 targets.
Give me that one. I need that one more time. I need to be able to marinate on that.
The fourth time in his last 23 healthy games. So not a game where like he played 3 snaps and left with an injury.
Okay.
Games where he played a reasonable amount of time. This is only the fourth time in his last 23 games, that's dating back 3 seasons at this point, that he had under 5 targets in a game.
So that's coaching. That's coaching and scheme right there. That's what that is.
And you have a new quarterback and a new play caller. So that's what scares me. And again, there were times where he was open. I mean, Baker Mayfield airmailed him on one. Like, I mean, there were times where he got open and the quarterback couldn't get him the ball. But this is I shouldn't say concerning. I got to be careful not to overreact.
Week 1, please, Jamie, please.
Namaste. It is worth monitoring next week. Because when you start to see a trend, and I know this trend doesn't carry over to today because Saquon Barkley had a gajillion yards and helped the Giants win. But there was a point I made a couple years ago when they switched quarterbacks from Eli Manning to Daniel Jones and they switched offensive play callers or whatnot, that Saquon Barkley's target share dropped. Not heavily, but enough to make a difference. Where under Eli Manning, we were looking at Saquon Barkley as a potential like 90 catch running back. And that was changing. I'm not saying we need to have any actionable advice here. I'm not saying we need to change your projections on Christian McCaffrey yet. I'm saying this is now a point that you kind of put a pin in and go, okay, is this a blip or the start of a trend? And we'll know in a couple of weeks. But if Christian McCaffrey is not going to be an 80, 90 catch guy, he's not going to be RB1. It's not going to happen.
Browns thoughts. I have one. I have a talking point that I'd like to start with.
Go for it.
This is just another example of the roulette that you play with trying to decide which Cleveland Browns running back you are going to feature on your team. Because yeah. Nick Chubb has a great game. 22 carries, 141 yards. That's a great game. But it's Kareem Hunt who gets in the end zone. And as somebody who has Kareem Hunt, sure, I meant on the ground. Sorry. For me, I have Kareem Hunt as my RB2 because I don't have Nick Chubb, and I it's nice to have him as an option. But I don't expect him to be able to put up great numbers every week because I know what I'm dealing with Nick Chubb. But like, this has kind of been the thing where like Chubb gets a lot of the workload. He puts up the big numbers in terms of yardage, but Kareem Hunt like just sneaks into the end zone. Like he just somehow finds his way into the end zone at least once every game, and it ends up working. The other person I'd like to talk about, Donovan Peoples-Jones.
That's the one. Let's talk about him.
This was a good game.
So he's a guy that I sound like Chris Collinsworth now. He sounds right now. Here's a guy. No, well, but
you need to lose your voice a little bit more if you're going
to. Yeah,
do
I know that was the whole thing. No, I'm staring at him right now on talking on the screen with Tirico. But he was somebody that in the preseason I kind of had like a little star next to. Of just sometimes you have a feeling about guys. Not that he's going to be an every week starter. Not that he's going to be a top 25 wide receiver or something like that. But that, hey, he's gonna walk into some more opportunities. He's the clear as day wide receiver two there. It's Amari Cooper and it's Donovan Peoples-Jones, and there's not really a question mark there. I'm of the mind that David Njoku is not going to be the productive player offensively that people think he's going to be, and quite frankly, even the Browns think he's going to be. So I've always had Donovan Peoples-Jones as my wide receiver two. We also heard at times in the preseason that, I know he's not there right now, but he will be coming back, that he had developed some chemistry with Deshaun Watson, and Deshaun Watson liked throwing Donovan Peoples-Jones the ball. He looks solid here. Mm-hmm. He led all Browns in targets with 11, routes run, receptions, receiving yards. Decent little performance for him. Got you about 9 fantasy points. Like, he's somebody that I think if he's available on waivers now, where he is for a lot of people, I think he's worth a spot in the back part of your bench. I think he's going to be somebody that is more like a bye week fill in or a matchup play, at least until Deshaun Watson gets back. Now, late in the season, if Deshaun Watson looks like he did prior to everything, gestures at everything, he could be a guy that puts up – he could be like one of those like playoff winners for you. Mm-hmm. Could be. But I like this. This was a solid performance. He has grown as a football player every year he's been in the league. He was raw coming out of Michigan, very raw, and it took him a while to get up to speed. I think he could have himself a nice, solid little season here that is worthy of being rostered.
So I just every time we finish a game, I just have to look at you in the camera and say, where are we going next? Because you've gone completely out of any potential order that I could even think of.
Yeah, because you're looking at like ESPN or something.
Sure.
And you've gone on the score. At least if I
transition to where you're at, I can potentially be able to help us out.
Well, we're going to talk about the game that was played 10 minutes from me in the monsoon, the Niners and the Bears. And look, there wasn't a lot of fantasy value. But so, Chris.
Yes, sir.
Talk to me. You remember all that talk about Deebo Samuel not wanting to run the ball?
I do.
Remember we did this thing all summer long. Where it's like Deebo hates the job. Yeah. Doesn't want to run anymore. Hates Kyle Shanahan. Hates San Francisco. Hates the 49ers. Hates the color red. Hates the football. Yeah. He's going to get traded. Get me out of here. Send me to Miami. Send me to the Jets. Send me to somewhere else.
I remember all of this.
In the first quarter of the game, they hand him the ball. This is prior to Elijah Mitchell getting hurt, by the way. Just add him to the ball, and he's just running the ball 5 times and gets in the end zone for a touchdown.
I would like to make a motion.
Can we just not – what do we do? Why do we waste our time with this?
Can I make a motion? Motion sure. Requested here on the show? I'd like to take this game and throw it completely out the window. I'm not taking any relevance out of what occurred in the monsoon. I'm just taking it.
There is a piece of relevance.
Here's
the thing.
No.
There is a piece of relevance, Chris. And you know why? Because there was a monsoon in the first quarter. There was a monsoon in the fourth quarter. The middle 30 of that game, there was not a monsoon. And there's some takeaway here because Trey Lance looked bad. I don't care where the game could have been played on the beach in Cabo. It doesn't matter if Trey Lance played poorly. But my takeaway is the Chicago running back situation, because we heard a lot of whispers, at least at this part of town, for those of you that don't know, I'm in Chicago, that the coaching staff was very meh on David Montgomery and really liked what they had in Khalil Herbert.
Well,
Montgomery got the work. He got 20 touches in this game. Got a grand total of 50 yards to show for, but he got 20 touches in this game. But late in that game, he started losing snaps to Khalil Herbert, who quite frankly looked better with the ball. He got in the end zone. I think Montgomery is more like a flex play for me right now, but that's a guy I'm looking to trade. If he has a big game next week, that's a guy I am trying to get off my roster, because I don't think David Montgomery is doing anything more than splitting carries with Khalil Herbert by the time we get to mid to late season, assuming everybody's healthy.
Yeah, this, I mean, I would agree that I think overall the takeaway about the 49ers quarterback situation and Trey Lance not looking particularly good is a storyline. But I just think overall, I can't put too much stock into a game that was played in these kinds of weather conditions. I just can't. I can't glean. It's week one. It was a monsoon for a large portion of the game. Like, I'm not going to sit here and be like, oh, the 49ers are doomed. Oh, the Bears are better than we thought. Like, I'm not going to fall into those two traps.
The Bears are not better than we thought. Elijah Mitchell's injury is a problem. I mean, if he's out long term, obviously running back injuries in San Francisco seem to go hand in hand. And it's partly why Kyle Shanahan always has a new leading rusher every year, but they're less deep in that backfield than they've been before. Like, you're looking at Jeff Wilson and, you know, when they Davis Price was inactive for this game,
but he'll probably just get elevated.
Yeah. Like, it's not a good room right now. So that does concern me. Obviously Lance is going to run the ball a lot more than Jimmy Garoppolo ever did.
But not supporting your young quarterback with a healthy running game. And that's a problem.
Correct. Which means what's going to happen? It's going to be Deebo Samuel taking a bunch of handoffs again, which again
is fine, but we spent 6 months yelling about it.
Yeah, but it's fine-ish, but look what happened here again today. And we talked about it last year. We talked about it a little bit in the offseason as well. It's taking away from his production as a receiver by a lot.
Yep.
And
so if you
look at when they did that shift midseason last year from Deebo Samuel the receiver to Deebo Samuel the hybrid, don't look at the fantasy totals. Look at the target share. Look at the routes run. Look at the receptions. It's a massive difference between those. And we're kind of back to that, which means if he doesn't get you a rushing touchdown, it's not going to be great. And you drafted him as a wide receiver one. So it's something to monitor.
Not to toot our own horns here, but we mentioned this at the time last year. We were like, hey, this is great and all. You're riding the Deebo train. But if he doesn't start getting into the end zone, like, the receiving numbers aren't there anymore. And like, every week we could do it, the next week he would have like two rushing touchdowns. So we'd be like, listen, we get it. We understand we're looking foolish here. But like, long term, this is, and
we're not saying bench him or drop him. I'm just saying it's something you have to be aware of.
And just don't be surprised when it does happen. The bottom could fall out here.
Yes.
That's the concern.
Very quickly.
That's my concern. I would like to move on to the next game, sir.
Okay, let's talk about Jacksonville and the Washington Commanders.
Sure. James Robinson?
Great. Yeah, so remember how we spent like literally...
This was our guy, Jamie. Like, this was our guy.
It is. But also remember we spent like 3 days talking about Cam Akers coming off of an Achilles, even though he played last year, and how like that's what sapped all his, you know, rushing ability. And then James Robinson just goes out there and looks awesome.
Are you kidding me? This is amazing. Like, I thought he was done. I thought there was no chance he was going to have any sort of productive role for Jacksonville. And he goes out there and has the game he has today. He gets in the end zone, 11 carries, 66 yards and a touchdown.
Yeah, he tears his Achilles late last season. And we're like, oh, there it goes. ETN's going to come in next year. He'll be healthy. He's going to take over the backfield. And then we didn't really hear much about him during the offseason. And then it's kind of like, oh, you know, he's getting there. And then we kind of heard last week, oh, you know, James Robinson's probably going to be active week one. And boy, was he ever. Now, he's not playing a lot on passing downs. He's not playing a lot in those third long situations, but he is clearly their early down guy and looked explosive. He looked good. He passed the eye test as well as the box score test. So, matchup-based flex play?
Do you know who also?
I mean, it's kind of where I feel like I'm going to land with James Robinson going forward.
Do you know who also passed the eye test?
Who?
Jahan Dotson.
Yeah. What a big boy catch that was to win.
That a catch?
What a big boy catch from a rookie in his first game ever.
Under the pressure of losing to Jacksonville in week one, makes that catch in that spot. Are you kidding me?
So this was a fun game for a lot of those Washington players because we haven't seen a healthy Curtis Samuel in a while either.
Dude,
and
he was
good. I'd be remiss if I didn't give him a shout out as well, who looks healthy and spry, and they used him a lot like he was used in Carolina, and he looks like the difference maker they were attempting to sign last year. When he had, it was like a groin injury, and then like he just had a ton of soft tissue stuff.
Yeah, really smart route to get him open for the touchdown. It was a very good play call.
He looked good, led the team with 11 targets. Jahan Dotson had two touchdowns, big plays for him. You know, Terry McLaurin had a huge play in this game. And oh, by the way,
Jamie,
Antonio Gibson got a lot of work and a lot of production.
Well, and he fumbled the ball.
So that's kind of where I am on here. And essentially what I said is like, look, the causes for – he had a nice game. Give him credit. You know, yeah, well, yeah, but it's what, 7 for 72 or something in the receiving game, led all them. The problem is the concerns that we had before aren't going away. And there's now more optimism about Brian Robinson Jr. being back midseason.
Week five, they're talking.
Yeah, like could be the minimum IR stint. Oh, and also Jaden McKissick is still getting plenty of work, not just in the passing game, but even in goal-to-go situations. So nice game for Antonio Gibson. Keep playing him as your as your running back two or flex for now.
But
everything that you had a concern about
still
exists just as much as it did prior to this game happening.
It is still 100% real that Brian Robinson ends up being the number one back by the time the season is over. That is still a very real possibility.
Yes.
And J.D. McKissick is still going to have a role on third downs, on passing situations.
This is going to be a three-headed attack once
Robinson gets back. And good luck figuring out who on a given day is going to be the guy. Good luck.
Correct.
Have fun.
Correct.
Speaking of having fun, I had a blast, an absolute blast, watching the New England Patriots lose to the Miami Dolphins. Couldn't have had more fun watching that football game.
Yeah.
They're not good, dude. They're not good.
They're a very bad team.
They're not good.
And this game was, if you were a Patriots fan, this was a tough, tough game to watch. But it's not unexpected.
Everything, like, every concern that everybody has had about the team dating back to when the draft was over and everything in offseason and free agency and the draft concluded, every concern that everybody had about the Patriots played out on the field for 60 minutes on Sunday. Like, it absolutely did.
Yeah, there's not a lot of fantasy takeaways here for me in this game, to be perfectly honest with you. Hill and Waddle looked good, like you expected them to.
Right.
Thought even though he didn't have a remarkable day, I thought there was a lot of positive signs for Chase Edmonds and the way he was used, how often he was running routes, you know, how many carries he got relative to Raheem Mostert. So I thought there was, you know, positive signs going forward, even though he had kind of a, you know, an average day. On the New England side, I mean, you look at Harris and you look at Stevenson as potential flex plays, and that's it. You're not playing any other New England Patriots. Just period.
Oh, and by the way, like I know the X-rays came back negative, but Mac Jones has something wrong with his back.
Yeah. Also, by the way, just found out Dak Prescott has something wrong with his hand. He's no longer playing in the fourth quarter.
I have now looked up to my screen to see Cooper Rush playing quarterback for the Cowboys, and I was about to ask you, what did I miss? So thank you for...
Yeah, they were looking at his hand. We'll see if we get an update before the end of the podcast. That'll be the last game we cover anyway, so we'll see if we get an update at that point.
Let's talk about the game that nobody actually deserved to win. Nobody actually deserved to be a victor in this game, but the Steelers are the victors. Imagine needing to go to overtime and winning the way the Steelers did after turning Joe Burrow over 5 times and still only winning by 3 points.
You do that, you have the Bengals. Like, let's talk about the end of game sequence very briefly. I know it's not fantasy, but it's like the end of game sequence where Jamar Chase has a touchdown.
Then he doesn't.
They
have
don't
a touchdown.
Challenge it.
Yeah, they don't. Then he doesn't have a touchdown.
Then he doesn't have a touchdown.
Then he thinks he has a touchdown.
Then he thinks he has a touchdown and doesn't get it.
Then he doesn't get that
then
touchdown.
Then finally gets a touchdown. Yeah. And you do all of that
to miss the extra point.
To then miss the extra point, go to overtime.
Unbelievable! It was the wildest.
I mean, this game.
And by the way, they missed what, 3-4 field goals?
Yeah,
the two teams combined in overtime.
Yeah, this game was this. Yeah, okay. For those of you that watched the BYU Baylor game on Saturday night late, that's what this game was in the NFL. Like, just the amount of missed field goals this weekend in both college and the NFL was just mind numbing.
It's not super fantasy relevant. The catch, Deontay Johnson. Made an overtime with one hand.
You know what?
You know what
is fantasy relevant with Deontay Johnson, though, is the fact that he got double-digit targets.
Okay. Then that's my segue to talk about how awesome that catch was.
Yeah, because to me, it was, what was the concern? And we talked about this way, way earlier on a previous podcast, that Rest in Peace TDN Fantasy Podcast. But my concern with Deontay Johnson, we talked about like my way too early mock back in like January or February, like he's going to switch quarterbacks. He's going to switch to quarterbacks that are going to be able to throw the ball more than 4.5 feet down the field. Will he still get the volume of targets and the type of target share that he saw with Ben Roethlisberger for a couple of years when they moved? In this case, it was insert quarterback here. Turned out to be Mitchell Trubisky. Slowish start, but he got the targets. And I think that's what's really important to me, because he's proven to be, at least so far in his career, a volume guy. Like, you want him as that quintessential PPR wide receiver that's going to get double-digit targets, can flirt with double-digit catches any single week. Maybe he's not going to put up 150 yards, probably not necessarily going to score more than 7 or 8 touchdowns, but he has a chance to go, you know, 10 for 120 any week just because of the volume. And I like seeing that for him here. And I also like seeing that for Pat Freiermuth, who I was one of my – I can't call him a sleeper tight end because a lot of people liked him.
But we talked about a guy that I was
targeting as that like a back end of tight end one territory. If you missed out on one of those elite options, Freiermuth was a guy that was right at the end of my back end of my top 10. Love to see the work he got here. And he had some really nice catches. And he's going to be a central piece for Trubisky and then eventually Kenny Pickett whenever he gets in.
I'm raising my hand. I would like to be recognized by the teacher.
Chris.
Thank you. Chris Schubert, Draft Good Players podcast. Najee Harris, 10 carries for 23 yards.
Yeah, he was banged up in this game.
See, but if you, I'm going to do this because this is what we do on the show. Yeah. If you listen to the TD and Fantasy podcast last year, we talked about this. We talked about this, is that he could get into the end zone and that would save him. But overall, the rest of the numbers were extremely pedestrian. And he got a lot of his points because Ben Roethlisberger couldn't throw the ball down the field and they were checking it down to Najee. That was his ticket to being a relevant fantasy football player. I'm not taking anything away from Najee's skill set, but in terms of fantasy relevance, this was always the fear. And now that they have a quarterback that can push it down the field a little bit better than Ben can, this is what you see. This is what happens.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's reasonable to talk about. He left large portions of this game. He had a knee ailment, obviously, that came up in addition to the foot thing that he's been talking about.
The Les Frank injury.
Yeah. We'll see if these injuries start to pile up. And again, you can maybe harken that back to last year as well and the massive volume of workload that he had right out of the gates. But I'm not going to take too much away from this game for him yet. Let's see how that knee is doing.
Do we have to talk about the next game? Do we have to?
We do.
Can we just skip it?
Also, by the way, Joe Mixon had 34 touches in the game.
Wild. Wild.
Just nuts. Nuts. Chris, you didn't think your Jets were winning this game, Chris.
In what capacity? Before the game started? No, absolutely not.
In your head. Not your fandom, not your heart, not your hope. But you had no expectation that you were going to win this game when you woke up this
morning. When I woke up this morning, the expectation was not to win the football game. But expectations are allowed to change based on the dynamics and the context. And the way that the defense played through the first 2.5 quarters of the football game, the Jets should have absolutely won this game. 24-9 is not indicative of how close the Jets defense kept this football game. I just want to make that
clear. It is indicative of how bad the Jets offense looked at quarterback.
1,000%. And that's a problem. I have so many things that I'd like to discuss about the Jets. I will let you go first, and then I will piggyback on what's left over.
Well, I just want to talk about the running backs first.
Michael Carter is the RB1 on this football team until further notice. Stop trying to make Breece Hall thing. I like Breece. He's going to be good. He's going to be a useful piece in this Jets offense. Michael Carter is the RB1 until further notice. How many times do I have to tell everybody? People asking me in the TD and premium, what about Breece Hall? Michael Carter, 60-40, and it basically played out that way. Michael Carter's the RB1. Breece Hall's going to be the RB2. That's the way it's going to work. And oh, by the way, Breece fumbled. Not really his fault, but he fumbled. So that's not going to help him either.
Yeah, I echo that thought entirely. We've been trying to tell you that if you've been listening to me or Chris or the TD and premium Discord, if you're in that. Michael Carter's the RB1. Breece Hall will have a role. Both backs are going to eat into each other's potential at their very high ceilings and just manage your expectations. It's really simple as that. Breece Hall is a matchup-based flex play for right now.
And Michael Carter...
Check back midseason.
Michael Carter is a year 2 player who is more explosive right now. That's not to say that by the time the season is over that's not flipped, but in the early part of the season, Michael Carter is the guy. Like, it's just that simple.
And he's also a more polished pass catcher and pass blocker at this point. So he's going to be on the field in those situations.
Okay, I completely derailed you because I had to take over.
No, that was the topic. I have a Ravens one, but talking about the Jets.
I have two other things.
Okay.
You spend the kind of money that this team did on CJ Uzoma and Tyler Conklin. You use draft capital to draft Jeremy Ruckert. And I know he's inactive because he's a young player and he's got to develop, right? He was always going to be a project. But I have to watch Lawrence Cager catch passes for this football team. When you paid CJ Uzoma and Tyler Conklin. Now, I know Tyler Conklin gets in the end zone with a garbage time touchdown, but Mike LaFleur, what are we doing here?
I was going to ask you about this.
What are
you
doing?
You're the president
of
the Tyler Conklin fan club.
But you spend all this money on tight ends and they're not the guy? The interception is because Lawrence falls over. Guy falls over. Flacco just overthrows him. It's a pick. Like, what are we doing? And oh, by the way, the guy that you drafted number 10 overall because you thought he was the best receiver in the draft can't get on the field. And then the first play he does get on the field, he's absolutely electric and gives your team a spark that they hadn't had throughout the course of the game. The usage of the tight ends was absurd to me. The way Garrett Wilson was used was absurd to me. Like, I did not understand it whatsoever. Now, Joe Flacco is a statue, and if the wind blows in his direction, he's stuck and he can't go anywhere. Now, the offensive line didn't help him out. And Jamie, I talked about this in the TDM Premium Discord. By the way, if you're not a TDM Premium member, go to thedraftnetwork.com, sign up to be a TDM Premium member. But I talked about this in the TDM Premium Discord that Max Mitchell was going to be the starting right tackle. Max Mitchell was probably the best offensive line for the Jets had today.
Yeah.
Absurd.
The
Jets defense held this rushing attack of Lamar Jackson and company. And now I know they were banged up. They didn't have J.K. Dobbins. They didn't have Gus Edwards. I get it. But they contained Lamar. Lamar had 17 rushing yards.
Yeah.
Like, they did their job.
Yeah.
And they weren't even close to being competitive in this football game.
I know. It's...
Until further notice, do not play any of your Jets. I'm sorry. You can't do it.
You can play Michael Carter.
Fine. That's the only one. If Joe Flacco's the quarterback, you can't play any of the receivers. You can't do it.
Probably not.
You can't.
I thought you got a decent game out of Corey Davis. Like halfway. You're not starting him without bye weeks. Like, he's one of those like bye week fill-ins. Right. But yeah, so to your point, yes. Yeah.
Okay, you want to talk about Lamar? Because he did not really. He did Lamar things. I mean, it wasn't a great game, but he still did some Lamar things when he was out there.
Yeah, I mean, he got the three passing touchdowns. I want to talk about Devin Duvernay. And kind of like, he was also a guy that I looked at in the same way that I talked about before with Donovan Peoples-Jones as a guy in the preseason. I went, maybe stepping up into a role. And look, he's obviously not going to catch two touchdowns every week. And he actually didn't play as much as I thought he did once I went to go look at the snap counts. But I think he's probably going to get picked up on waivers, because when anybody has a two touchdown game, they're almost always picked up. I'm not spending fab on him yet, but if you're in a league where he doesn't get picked up, I put one of those little, check that little star box next to him to kind of watch going forward. The Ravens just run so much 13 personnel, and you know, all these guys, like, these just receivers are just not on the field as much. So I'm not saying you have to add him, but I'm at least intrigued, because he was somebody that caught my eye in the preseason and caught my eye before the season, just given the role he might be stepping into. And obviously in his first test in that spot, had a lot of success.
I also think it was a byproduct. His game was a byproduct of the Jets did a really good job shutting down Mark Andrews. They made it really difficult for Andrews and Isaiah Likely to get involved in the offense. And so they had to scheme up something different. So I don't expect that to be a problem for the Ravens on a weekly basis. Like, I expect Mark Andrews to be the leading receiver for this football team. And so I wonder if Duvernay struggles to get those targets once the reallocation kind of occurs.
Yeah, I can see that. That's why I'm not overly excited to throw him in. Just he's noteworthy. He's not ad worthy yet.
Falcons fans, you probably don't want to hear this, but your football team
played again.
No, Jamie, I'm gonna. This was perfect. This was quintessential how to tank without tanking. This was excellent.
It's perfect for everybody, Arthur Smith, because if they keep doing this, he's not going to be there when they untank.
Right. For everybody other than Arthur Smith, this was perfect. You played a competitive football game against a team a lot of people think can be competitive in the NFC and make the playoffs and be a threat. You competed against that team. All of the players that you wanted to look good looked good, and then you gave it away at the end. You could not tank any better than this tank job by the Falcons. Unbelievable job.
It was just mind-numbingly brutal. But the two takeaways for me is, one, Michael Thomas looks back.
Well, dude.
The two touchdowns he has, he beats AJ Terrell, who is a damn good corner, one-on-one, and just outmans him twice.
And then the second one, finesse to get his feet down.
Yes. He looks – and again, you were starting to worry, because like about a quarter and a half in this game – well, first off, this entire Saints offense looked like dog you know what. Well, For the first half.
And I think that's
terrible.
I think that's going to be the concern. I think that's the roller coaster that Saints fans are going to ride throughout the year, is that they're going to have pockets where they're going to look like that. And then they're going to have pockets where they're going to be able to just score in bunches.
But yeah, once they got going, I mean, Michael Thomas looked great. And on the other side of the ball, I know everybody was trying to avoid him all offseason for some reason. And like, they were allergic to him, but Cordarrelle Patterson's going to be a thing.
He's good. He's good at the football.
He's just going to be a thing. Like,
I have him on my team, and I benched him because I wasn't sure. I'm reconvinced he's good again.
And look, I know Damian Williams got hurt early in this game, but like, who do they have at the end of this game? They had Cordarrelle Patterson and a converted cornerback.
Well, okay,
as their two running backs.
Can I be fair?
Yes.
If there's a long-term, Tyler Allgeier will be activated, and he will be.
Sure.
And
but Tyler Allgeier is not a threat to Patterson's workload at this point.
No, but you
as evidenced by the fact that he wasn't even on the field.
Fair. I'm just giving people the information that Tyler Allgeier was inactive today and probably will slot into the RB2 role.
Yes, with Damian Williams out. Correct. But Patterson's going to get work. He can get you fantasy points in a myriad of ways. Again, he's a weekly flex. Like I know he's older than the players that a lot of times you like to put there. I know he's not a sexy option. I know everyone's been all offseason trying not to draft him, but dude's been productive. What else can I say? Falcons are going to play these stupid weird games too.
I would like to talk about Drake London, if that is okay with you.
Very solid.
Seven targets, very solid. Five catches, 74 yards. Exactly what you're looking for out of a rookie. Again, when you look at this Falcons offense, they're going to run the ball with Patterson. And when they throw the ball, it's going to go to one of two people. It's going to go to Drake London. It's going to go to Kyle Pitts. That's it.
Yep.
It's pretty simple. It's an easy game. It's very easy to figure out what's going to happen with the Atlanta Falcons. Mariota's going to run the ball. Patterson's going to run the ball. And then when they throw it, it's probably going to go to one of two people. And that's it. Yep. And if you have one of those two people, you're going to play those people. Because Kyle Pitts is going to be good. And same thing with Drake London, because he was very impressive. Just from a volume perspective, we talked about this. Talent-wise, I don't think Drake London's a top 15, 25 talent receiver in the National Football League. But just from a pure volume opportunity perspective, he's in that conversation because they don't have anybody else.
He's got that opportunity.
They don't have anybody else.
Totally agree.
Is that it from this game? Is that all you want to talk about?
It is.
Oh boy, let's talk about. I did not know that. I did not know that this game was up next. But let's talk about this because this team's defense is worse than Swiss cheese. It's got more holes in it than Swiss cheese. As the Chiefs beat the Cardinals 44-21, and the score is not indicative of this game was never this close.
It wasn't even that close.
It wasn't even this close.
No, Patrick Mahomes looks great still.
Kill that narrative. It doesn't appear that losing Tyreek Hill is going to be a problem for this offense. They appear to be able to figure it out.
Yeah, and Tyreek Hill figured it out just fine in Miami too.
Everybody wins here.
Maybe great players are great players.
Juju Smith-Schuster.
What a weird concept that is.
Juju looked good.
He did.
I was impressed.
He didn't do anything remarkable.
The usage
but
he got was
plenty
good.
Of targets.
Yeah, I like the usage.
Yeah. And I think that the thing I take away from this game is we had the clear delineation of who are the top two wide receivers on Kansas City and who are the other guys. Mm-hmm. And right now, just based on their usage, how often they were on the field, how many routes they ran, it was Juju Smith-Schuster and Marquez Valdes-Scantling. The hyphenated group is the one that very much showed that they are the clear top two right now. Because all we heard all offseason is like, well, what about Sky Moore? Or what about this guy? What about Mecole Hardman? What about... It's very clearly at this stage, it's Juju, MVS, and then obviously the number one guy is going to be Travis Kelce, like always, forever and always. But I think that getting that information in this game is really encouraging because I think a lot of the reason why some of their fantasy values were depressed is that there was just this confusion of this logjam of all of these options, and it became very clear who's on the field more often than not, and it's Juju and MVS. Shout out to Clyde Edwards-Helaire catching a couple touchdowns as well.
I was going to mention that. Make sure we talk about that. Isaiah Pacheco gets into the end zone.
Yes. And Arizona.
It's bad. They're bad.
They played.
They're a bad football team, Jimmy.
They were there.
They're a bad football team. Let's
talk. Here's the thing. You can't have a second half collapse if you're bad in the first half, too.
It's an unbelievable point. Can we talk about the real football for a second here? And yes. There are certain teams that we will do that. Obviously, the Jets, because I'm a fan of the Jets. The Cardinals, because we've both lived in Arizona. I still live in Arizona, so these are teams that we watch pretty closely. They have a center who contemplated retirement and wasn't sure if he was going to be able to come back, right? And then comes back, and in the first game...
It comes back and unable to snap the ball. He was unsure if he wanted to get the ball to the quarterback.
To his quarterback, right? By the way, they have guys that they're signing off of other teams' practice squads to be their backup left guard because that's how depleted they are at an offensive line. And then let's talk about their receivers. They're already down Rondale Moore, who, by the way, the exact injury that Rondale Moore had is the exact injury that people warned about when they drafted this guy, is that it's a tough time for him to stay on the field. They're without DeAndre Hopkins. So their top two wide receiver options in this football game were A.J. Green and Hollywood Brown. That's it. Yep. That's what their best two options were.
And Greg Dortch.
A.J. Brown and Hollywood Brown were the two best options that the Cardinals had on offense. They can't protect their quarterback. They don't have receivers that can really get a ton of separation. And oh, by the way, their defense is a revolving door. I think they could put 11 traffic cones out there. They might be better.
Remember when they tried to put like Isaiah Simmons on everybody and he couldn't cover anybody? It was really fun to watch in the first half of that game.
But Jamie, we talked about this with the Patriots. Everything that everybody talked about the Patriots played out on the field on Sunday. That same sentence can apply to the Arizona Cardinals. Every concern that 100%. That everybody had about the Arizona Cardinals played out over 60 minutes. And oh, by the way, their reward for playing the Chiefs is their next two games are against the Raiders in Vegas and then home against Sean McVay and the Rams, who absolutely own them. And I know the Rams didn't look good in week one, but I'm here to tell you, the Cardinals didn't look all that much better.
You're not wrong.
James, I mean, what do you want to talk about from a fantasy perspective?
He does the thing that he does.
Like, there's nothing to talk about from this football game. From the Cardinal side of things, nothing.
No.
I mean, you're gonna play Kyler because two touchdowns, and he's going to be able to run the ball. Because he's just going to be running for his life. That's it. That's how this is going to go.
That's all I got. Yeah, that's all I got. Let's talk about the Giants.
I wish the Jets played with the fight that the Giants played with in this football game. Like, I wish that my team could have that kind of fight. What Brian Daboll clearly has that team engaged, energized, connected. I know it's the first game from a coaching perspective, but they were in a game against a team they probably shouldn't have been in the game against, and they come out with a victory. And the Titans, 0-1, they now get the Bills next week, right?
Yeah.
Have fun.
Is that Monday night?
The TDN Bowl, Justin Mello versus Joe Marino. It's going to be fun
might
all
be
week.
Monday night game. Yeah, I think it might be. There's two Monday night games next week randomly.
Fantastic.
Like, instead of doing the week one double Monday night, they're doing week two double Monday night.
I feel that this podcast has to start the talking about the Giants by recognizing Saquon Barkley. I feel like we.
Yeah, no. Let me. I want to read you exactly what I wrote in my article because I think it sums up my thoughts on this because there's. Well, let me just read it. It said, no one was more out on Saquon Barkley last year than I was. And I carry that skepticism with me into this season. But Barkley looked nothing like his 2021 form in week one. Like, that is, if I was to put an elevator pitch to this, he looked dynamic, explosive, powerful. And it was throughout the game. Like, where we saw a couple plays like that last year, we saw him string together maybe two or three plays in a row where he looked like that. And then it kind of went off. As you can hear my cat yelling in the background, agreeing. This was constant. Like, this was the player we saw 2 years ago, three years ago. Like, this looked like the healthy Saquon Barkley again. I should say pre-injury Saquon Barkley. So I'm buying back in with this. Like, he didn't pass the eye test for me last year. And I was like, we're not doing this based on name value. He's passing the eye test for me this time around.
Can I tell you why he's probably passing the eye test? The offensive line is definitely better than it was a year ago. Yes. That's step one. And step two, I just trust the creative process of the offensive play calling. Joe Judge was again, I don't mean to keep bringing him up, but like, look at the Patriots, man. Joe Judge and Matt Patricia are the ones calling plays. And Joe Judge was the coach of this football team. Like, Brian Daboll is a more creative person, and he got Saquon Barkley more involved. Now, we will eat the crow, and it was a great first week for Saquon. I want to see it moving forward, but a great first note. I'm gonna talk about something real quick.
Okay.
The true wide receiver one on the New York Giants is Sterling Shepard, and you're not going to try to convince me it's anybody else.
You must not know what train I've been rolling on.
No, not you. This is to the people. Because
now,
to
be fair, he ran like a gajillion routes in the first half and never got a look. But then once he did, he had that huge play, and then they finally got him into the game a little bit more. But I'm with you.
He is the wide receiver one on this football team. Don't you forget it. Gets in the end zone. Was it 4 catches, 71 yards? At the end of the day, that'll work. So good job, Saquon. Yeah. Good job.
And he had the huge play.
Good job, Sterling Shepard. Good job, all those guys.
Also coming off of an Achilles. A lot of Achilles injuries that guys are coming back from this week.
Are the Titans. We'll talk about the Titans. I mean, Derrick Henry doesn't have a bad game. But for his
he didn't have an explosive an explosive run either. Like, he was just, you know, where like you know Derrick Henry does the thing where, like, you know, it was the old thing they used to say with Adrian Peterson, right? Like, you have 4 yards, 3 yards, 2 yards, 4 yards, 3 yards, 20, two, four, 45. He didn't have any of those really big ones. I think I don't know what his long was, but at least from what I saw with my own eyes while I was watching, it was like 7 or 8 yards was his long. Like, it was. They're still rotating him out of the game and passing downs. Dontrell Hilliard got work there and caught a couple touchdowns as well. He's as we knew going in, he's the clear handcuff to Derrick Henry. I don't think you need to pick him up otherwise. But this is just – it's just a weird game for Tennessee. Like, it just never felt like their offense got out of the starting blocks. And it kind of felt like the Giants were going to keep throwing the game away, and it wasn't going to be an issue. But this Titans offense just something off right now. Like, they didn't look horrible. They didn't have any like very glaring major error, but it just didn't look good. Like, it doesn't look like a playoff caliber offense.
You know what? They could use a really it's just tough to find, but they could use a really physical wide receiver that's got some burst. Yeah, it can get down
maybe
the field.
Maybe they could trade for somebody.
Maybe they could. You know, maybe they could get that guy. I was surprised by this result. I mean, the Giants just, I think, played with, you know, I think they played for their coach, right? I think it's just clearly mark this as a new chapter, that there's just a different mentality there for the Giants. And again, I'm not going to completely write the Titans off or completely buy in on the Giants for one football game. But again, one of those week one results that shocks you. That's one of the, speaking of week one results that shock you, speaking of that, Kevin O'Connell, the Minnesota Vikings. Are you kidding me?
I'm not shocked they won. I'm shocked they won the way they won, correct, which they were the dominant team from the word go to the end of the game.
It was all them.
The Packers were never in that game.
Well, I mean, it would help if Christian Watson could catch a wide open touchdown. That would be very helpful. It's not a great look for the rookie. And not great.
Yeah. Aaron Rodgers is already pissed off at all of his receivers, and it's great because it's week one. And look, I know the last year they had that just pathetic performance against the Saints in week one. If everybody can go back in the Wayback Machine.
Five touchdowns for Jameis, I believe. Is that game?
It was pathetic. The difference was last year's team was better.
This team is way offensively.
This team
way
has
worse
flaws. Yeah. And by the way, maybe this is the theme of the podcast, Chris, because you keep bringing it up. I'm going to bring it up again. When you know something is real, when you've evaluated an issue to exist for a long time, and then that issue presents itself and all of the reasons why you were worried about that issue right in front of your face, that's when you know it's real. And we saw it with New England. We saw it with Arizona. And now we saw it with Green Bay. I'm not saying they're going to go, 5-12. But this is not a team that's going to win the Super Bowl as currently constructed. It's not happening. And if you're Green Bay, just winning the North and losing in the playoffs isn't good enough. And quite frankly, winning the North isn't guaranteed either.
Jamie, do you mind doing me a favor real quick?
Sure.
Do you mind breaking down the performances from the two running backs for the Green Bay Packers in this football game? Do you mind breaking those down for me?
I'll let me take a look here.
Oh, I have it. I'm setting.
Pull it back up.
I'm setting it up.
Because I have thoughts on how they were used.
I'm setting it up on purpose different. Because I have shared with you, and I don't remember if I've shared it on the podcast, my theory of the way the Packers are going to operate and why I'm concerned about relying on Aaron Jones as a true week-to-week number one running back because of the way A.J. Dillon was used in the second half. And I have the numbers in front of me if you'd like to know. 5 carries, 49 yards for Aaron Jones, 10 carries, 45 yards and a touchdown for A.J. Dillon. But I think the more important thing, A.J. Dillon was targeted 6 times. He led the team, 5 catches for 46 yards.
Yeah. Yeah. Both of these guys are going to get used a lot in the passing game. I'm glad you had that takeaway because my takeaway too was how impressed I was with one, the target volume that A.J. Dillon got and how good his hands were. You know, we have heard that it's an area that they liked and they felt comfortable with him taking a bigger role as a pass catcher this year. I wanted to see it and did a good job. And that's going to be a continued role for them going forward. And they're both going to eat into each other's work. I was surprised we didn't see more targets for Aaron Jones because whenever Aaron Jones had the ball in his hand in this game, he was really good. So I was a little surprised that he didn't get used even more in this game. I know you're not going to run the ball a lot when you're down constantly, but it's a little surprised he wasn't used more, but obviously the story of the game is on the other side, right?
Justin Jefferson, good at the football.
Very good.
Very good at the football. 9 for 184 and 2 touchdowns. Picking up right where he left off. Says, okay, I got you, no worries.
Just an absolutely dominant performance from him. Like, I just tip of the cap.
Yeah, listen, credit where credit's due. Kirk Cousins looked good in this game. Dalvin Cook looked good in this game. I know he doesn't get into the end zone, but Justin Jefferson looked good. Like, exactly the way you expect the Minnesota – and this is the theme. This is the theme of week one. The exact way you expect the Minnesota Vikings to win football games, Dalvin Cook running the football, Kirk Cousins to Justin Jefferson. That's the expectation.
Yes.
And that's how it played out. Credit to Kevin O'Connell. It felt different. It felt like, okay, they're running an offense that they think Kirk can handle, they think is going to – play to their strengths. I was impressed with the way, and again, it's just one game. I'm not going to completely, you know, flip my predictions for the NFC North, but I was impressed with the way Minnesota won this football game. Not surprised that they won it because they're a good football team that has talent. The way they won it is the impressive part.
I couldn't agree more. They dominated from the word go. Like the Packers were not in this game at any point.
We have to talk about, because I have, you know, the mantle that I have taken up about Derek Carr, and that I believe he's a top 8 quarterback in the National Football League. He didn't help me today. He didn't help the argument. He didn't help his case with his 3 interception performance. Now the Chargers win the football game. Davante Adams gets targeted 17 times in this football game. Are you kidding me? Get some other people involved. Josh, what are we doing?
Doesn't miss Aaron Rodgers, apparently.
He ended up with 17 targets, 10 catches, 141 yards, and a touchdown. And Jamie, I don't believe this is fantasy relevant. I'm not sure. Maybe you'll tell me. The star of the show for the DeAndre Carter out here making plays for the Los Angeles Chargers. What was that?
Yeah, it was interesting because he was the guy, once Keenan Allen went down with an injury in this game, whereas DeAndre Carter took a much bigger role and was just carving up Vegas' secondary while everybody was waiting for Mike Williams to, I don't know, get a target. I mean, there were some weird times there, but Carter's looked good at times. Not somebody I'm going to pick up necessarily. I guess if we see a multi-week injury for Keenan Allen, just don't know if you're ever going to feel like, are you going to start DeAndre Carter right now with no bye weeks? Like, I don't think you really need to, unless you're in a really deep league. I don't think he's a guy you need to pick up. But Herbert looked great. Keenan Allen was looking great till he got hurt, and Mike Williams was non-existent. But this happened. Like, Mike Williams had like 5 of these types of games last year, even in his breakout year. So this is just kind of what you have to deal with when you have Mike Williams on your team.
I've been invaded by the oil burner here in the recording studio because I'm not at home. I'm not in my normal home. I'm back in New York. Sure. So if you hear that big, loud background noise, don't be concerned, everybody. It's okay. Everything's fine here. I don't know if anybody can hear it, but I can hear it. It's very loud for me. We only have one more game to discuss, and that is a game that I don't really know if the only fantasy takeaway I think you're going to have is Leonard Fournette is good, and he's going to run the ball a lot for Tampa Bay. 19-3, they ended up winning. I think, obviously, we're going to keep an eye on Dak Prescott with his hand, what that looks like. But, Jimmy, your Sunday night football thoughts as we close out the show.
Unfortunately, it's a lot of injury-related. You already mentioned Fournette. That's really the only takeaway that I have. / Julio Jones looked pretty good. But what is Chris Godwin's status? We heard soft tissue. We heard maybe hamstring injury. What is Dak's status? They were looking at his hand, thumb-ish area. All of that is going to play into the long-term effects.
And you have 2 offensive line injuries, one for each team, that I think is going to be important. Donovan Smith for the Bucs, that's going to be important because they're already banged up. And speaking of already banged up, so are the Cowboys, and they lose Connor McGovern in this game, I believe, as well. So those are 2 things that we're going to need to get answers on about if those are going to be problems long-term for both of those teams, because that's going to impact the way they conduct their offenses.
2 teams that could ill afford to lose more offensive line talent.
Yeah, not great.
Like, probably the 2 teams in the league that could not afford to lose any offensive line talent just go up against each other and lose starters.
The internet tells me that Dak Prescott needs to have surgery on his thumb and is going to miss multiple weeks. That is what the internet tells me.
When you say the internet.
Well, I have... Hoops. So over at the Action Network, the gambling website, we have some friends who work over there. They just
tweet. Okay, Jerry Jones has said
so. The source is the owner of the team. I think that's a good source. We'll take the news.
Yeah, Dak will be out a while and need surgery on his right thumb. Quote: "We will have to have Cooper Rush step up. He's got all the reps, and we will go from there."
Okay, so imagine. So you're 0-1. Now you have Cooper Rush. Do me a favor, Jamie. Can you pull up the Cowboys schedule for the next couple of weeks, please?
I don't want to. Loss. No, I'm just kidding. All right, let's see. Cowboys schedule. I would love to. My internet's being very slow.
I mean, I could do it, but I just figured you had your phone. I know, but
you're lazy and you hate me.
I see you doing it. So.
All right, so now I get to look off camera. Well, they get the Cincinnati Bengals at home next week.
Not a great draw.
Then at the Giants, home Washington, at the Rams, at the Eagles, home Lions, home Bears, at Packers, at Vikings. Colts are on that schedule somewhere as well. Titans.
It's not awful, but it's not great.
They were tenuous to win the division anyway. And like now, yuck.
I mean, in an NFC where you probably only have to win 8 games to be in consideration for a playoff spot, they're going to be in that mix, I think. Cooper Rush is going to have to find a victory here.
God, what a sad sentence. What a sad sentence that is.
Well, but this is the problem. The burner has finally stopped here in the background. They had a couple quarterbacks on the roster. They cut them both. Like, and not to say that Will Greer, who was one of the guys on the roster, would be the savior.
Yeah,
here.
I mean, they were ill prepared for this.
Right, and they didn't address this at any point. Now listen, you call up San Francisco. Take Jimmy G off your hands.
Oh, there we go. That's what the story's going to be about this game in the morning. It's going to be why the Cowboys should trade for Jimmy Garoppolo. How could I not see it from here? That's what it's going to be.
I mean, am I foolish for that being my initial thought?
I guess it depends on how long Dak's going to be out.
He said several weeks.
How much?
What does several weeks mean?
I don't know. Oh, by the way, Connor McGovern out around 4 to 6 weeks.
Doesn't matter who their quarterback is. They're not going to be able to protect that quarterback. Doesn't matter. They could have Troy Aikman back there. It's not going to work. Jamie, the Cowboys they might only win like six games.
This isn't good. Like, this is bad. Good thing I got money on the Eagles to win the East.
I believe I'd like to officially say here on the podcast that I'm out on the Cowboys. I'm out.
Out on the Cowboys.
I'm out on them.
Chris, you have any other final takeaways here? I'm not going to bother previewing tomorrow's game just because people will listen to this at different points, and I don't want to bore them if they've listened to this after the game is played tomorrow.
The show gets released Monday morning is when the show comes out. So,
but some people are busy, Chris. Some people have lives. I understand. I don't expect people to drop everything they're doing for us, Chris.
Enjoy the football game.
I don't know why you have that complex.
Enjoy the football game, or if you've already watched it, I hope you enjoyed the football game. How about that? My final thought here, listen, it's week one. I'm not going to overreact to any of the stuff that we saw. I think there's important context to glean from these performances, and I think we've kind of laid that out. There is some confirmation about some things that I felt, and we talked about on the show. There's some confirmation on some worry points that I have for some certain football teams, and they're going to have to address those things and try to change my mind. I think I use the 3-game mark as kind of when things start to settle in, and after 3 games, I feel pretty comfortable saying what I think something is or isn't. So we're still in that infancy, in that honeymoon period with these 2022 teams, where I'm not super comfortable going out on a limb. I am very comfortable saying the Cowboys are not going to be very good. I feel very comfortable with that. That's my one.
Yeah.
That's the one place I will go out on a limb. But yeah, other than that, like, don't. My advice to everybody is don't completely overreact. Don't like all of a sudden change your entire team because of 1 week's worth of performances. Just let things settle down just a touch before you start making drastic overhauls to your team.
I think that's a good point. And I think it's important to take note. And like I said, if you missed anything and want to look at some more specifics and stuff, you can go check out my article at thedraftnetwork.com in the fantasy section, kind of breaking down. I think I have like 28 different bullet points breaking things down that I think are important from week one. But it is important to remember it is 1-game sample size. And yes, there's a lot we can learn because it's not just any first game. It's the first time we're seeing these new teams and new systems and new coaches and new players and new quarterbacks and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But it's also 1 game.
Mm-hmm.
And we could come back here next week and all of a sudden, you know, Mike Williams can go 5 for 123 and 2 touchdowns.
Or Saquon has a bad game. Or
Saquon goes 15 carries for 47 yards and a fumble.
Right.
Like, let's not overreact. Let's learn. Let's acknowledge. And let's start to identify trends.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I would say. Let's start to identify trends.
And then use those trends with the context to make informed decisions, right? I think that's correct. I think that's what you're doing right now. You are still in an information gathering stage, and hopefully this podcast helped you gather some of that information for this week. So that's it for us. The Draft Good Players podcast returns later in the week. You got Keith, you got Ray, they got you. We're back next Monday morning, Sunday night. Jamie and I will get back together to recap all of the Week 2 action. But everybody, enjoy the rest of your week. We'll talk to you next Sunday, but stay tuned. The Draft Good Players podcast, we're back to you in your podcast feed on Wednesday. Everybody have a great week. We'll talk to you then.